As a freshman at Texas A&M, Ben Stewart remembers how confused he was about some of the pre-game rituals. He would ask his roommates questions like,
why are thousands of us entering this football stadium on Friday night when the game doesn't start till Saturday? Why are we loading up the stadium at midnight when the game's tomorrow afternoon? And I'm asking him these questions, and they said, well, because what we're about to do is called midnight yell. And they said, we arrive in the stadium at midnight, thousands of us, and we practice the yells we're going to do during the game tomorrow. Which I thought, okay, there's a logic to that. I get that. So they're like, so we're going to practice. I'm like, great. They're like, yeah. So we're going to get in the stadium for a few minutes. We're going to practice this. And then when the practice is done, in a moment, all the lights will be turned off in the stadium, and then you make out with the person next to you. And I was like, oh, yeah, wait, what? Like, suddenly their explanation took a strange turn. I'm like, what are you saying? And they're like, no, that's how it goes. We turn off the light, and you start making out with the person you brought. Or if you didn't bring somebody, it's no big deal. You just hold up a lighter, and someone will find you, and you kiss them. And I started laughing, like, eh, and then I realized they're not joking. And I'm like, oh, Mike, this is like a total introvert nightmare. I was like, what if I don't have anybody? What if everyone in the stadium's kissing somebody? And I'm like a stalker sitting there going, how's that going? I'm like, I don't want to be that guy. And so I was like, what am I going to do? And then it hit me, but what if someone does find me? And they come to me, and I don't want to kiss them. Do I start coughing? Like, sorry, you don't want to. Do I just hit the ground or like extinguish the light suddenly? I'm like, what do I do? And I just realized I'm stressed. This has nothing to do with football. I wasn't prepared, right? And so finally, I just realized I'm not ready for the moment. And so I just stared at my shoes until the moment was over. But I remember this moment because it struck me as I was staring at my toes how fascinating it was that with something as simple as a flipping of a switch, they could create such intense, disparate emotions in a crowd. I mean, for some people, that moment would be filled with anticipation because that is the moment they've been waiting for. Because they brought somebody cute, right? And so all these yells were just a precursor to the main event, right? And they were just like, this is gonna be the best night of my life. For some people, there was anticipation. For other people, they were with the person they'd been dating for like 14 years, which isn't even right if you're in college, but they were just gonna kiss like usual, you know, like a little old couple, all the magic gone, but there they were, right? And yet for other people, I imagine they're standing there, and as soon as those lights were extinguished, it reminded them of a year ago at Midnight Yell when they were with somebody, and now they're alone. And that was a painful moment for them. Or if you were me, it was that unique mix of crashing stresses about what if I never find somebody and what if I do find somebody, and it was just kind of that mixture that created this tsunami of panic in my soul, right? Now, why bring all that up? For this reason. The same exact thing happens in rooms like this whenever I say we're going to talk about relationships. So I remember in that same stadium, Kyle Field, 10 years later, I was leading Breakaway, and the stadium was filled with thousands of college students. And in that moment, I was talking about the toxic nature of secrets, how they steal your strength and sap your joy. And I told him, you need to confess your sins to trusted friends. You'll find healing that way, is what the Bible will say. And I said, but here's the reality. For some of you, maybe the place to start is if there's some secret that's sapping your strength like the heat of summer, you need to write it on a piece of paper, and we put trash cans at the bottom of the stadium. You could walk down and put it in there. Something you never told anybody that was weighing you down. We had thousands of people come forward, filled up these trash cans with confessions. And as I sat and read through them in my office, 4 out of 5 were about the desperate heartbreak of relationships gone wrong.
My name is Jason Daiba, and you're listening to the Passion Podcast, where I get to talk to artists, speakers, and culture makers who have focused their lives on the fame of Jesus. Today, I'm talking to Ben Stewart, the pastor of Passion City Church in Washington, D.C., as well as author of the book Single, Dating, Engaged, Married. As he was working on the book, Ben discovered he's not the only one who has found himself in some uncomfortable scenarios.
Psychologists will even say, like, there's some studies that have shown a rapid increase in self-reported awkwardness socially among people in their 20s. And I'm reading these reports and I'm like, that really accords with what I'm seeing when we would interact with students. They would say it to me and be very like, yeah. I don't know how to talk. I don't know how to do this. And there was this lack of confidence in social interaction. You don't think of it much as a skill of interacting with people and picking up on social cues. But when the majority of your communication is increasingly on a phone, you get to craft the wording exactly how you want it. Hmm. You get the distance from people's faces so you don't react to what you said did to them emotionally. And so it scrambles social interaction.
Yeah.
And you see it in just very pragmatic ways. Like I read Aziz Ansari talking about holding focus groups with singles in their 20s and 30s and their parents. Mm-hmm. And he said when it dawned on him was when he put together this group and he split them up in a single room and the parent side of the room was loud. Because as soon as they sat down, they're all talking, getting to know each other. Why are you here? What does your son do? Da-da. He said the 20-30 side of the room was silent.
Wow.
Because they were all on their phones. And he said, that's when I realized there is a difference with our generation. And what I've experienced is a lot of older friends of mine tend to want to shame young people about all these kids on their phones.
Yeah.
And I look and go, man, they didn't create this world. They inherited it. And it's brought some good things, but it's brought some challenges. And as someone who pastors them and loves them, I want to help them navigate the challenges well.
How would you describe just the current landscape of dating in American culture?
Well, statistically now, there's only two categories that have increased of where people meet the person they marry.
Mm-hmm.
That is at the bar and online.
Okay.
And you can meet good people at bars and you can meet good people online, but you dilute the pool of common experiences when you're at those places.
Hmm.
And so what's happening for a lot of people is the dating experience is being drug out and it's taking longer to find affinity.
How much longer?
Gosh, I mean, now the average person gets married at age 28, 29, which just a generation ago, it was 26.
And before that, it was 24 and
like, yeah, and not all of that was good. It's not like, hey, we should all go backwards.
Yeah.
Some of it's not bad, but you've got part of the delay in marriage for some is not, some of it could be they just want to wait, but a lot of it I find is rooted in fear and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of messing up marriage, fear of messing up their career goals,
mm-hmm.
or just confusion on how to connect with one another.
Yeah.
And so that's where, you know, for me, the metaphor that I gripped onto was this idea of being at sea.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find so many people, when they talk about relationships, they want steps. And I'm like, relationships are more like sailing a ship than building a desk from IKEA.
Okay.
You know, like, and I get that. Like, when I build a desk from IKEA, I don't want someone to give me principles.
Yeah.
Well, here's how wood and metal interrelate. I'm like, dude, don't tell me. I don't care. Just give me the steps.
Just a little man in the corner.
Yeah.
Holding a screwdriver.
Exactly.
That's all you need.
But in relationships, the environment's dynamic. You can't give someone step-by-step directions. You can't get step-by-steps if you're sailing across the Atlantic. You need principles.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you've got guys like, you know, Steve Callahan was lost at sea, his ship wrecked, lost at sea for 76 days alone in a little rubber life raft.
Wow.
And was starving to death, but he took three pencils, lashed them together and made a sextant and used it to measure the distance between the sun and the horizon. And because he understood these fixed realities about the universe,
yeah.
alone in his little raft, he discerned what latitudinal line he was on the globe and then paddled into the right stream that got him to the Caribbean.
That's incredible.
And you go, this guy was lost at sea, but he knew some fixed realities about the universe that don't change, and they brought him safely home. And so what I found is, regardless of where you are relationally, and even as the times change, there's some fixed realities about who God is, who we are, how we're made, and what works, that if I can give people these stars to navigate by, they're going to get safely home. And that's why I wrote the book. It's more like a guidebook of navigating the uncertain waters of life and love.
When we come back, Ben Stewart talks about the power of being single and the dark side of the buddy system. This is the Passion Podcast. Stay with us.
Hey everyone, it's Brett Yonker from Passion, and I just want to drop in real quick because a lot of people don't know that Passion has a seminary. It's called Passion Global Institute, and it's for everybody. It's for people who want to pursue a theological degree of some kind, or maybe get their master's degree, but it's also for people who might just want to take one or two courses in apologetics or missions or another topic of interest to them. If you're someone who is ready to take the next step in spiritual growth, I'd encourage you to check it out today at PassionGlobalInstitute.com.
So this book covers four different, let's say, seasons of relationships: single, dating, engaged, married. And one of the things that you talk about is how each one of these affords us some type of opportunity. What do you mean by that? Like, for a single person, how is that an opportunity for them?
Yeah, what's fascinating, in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul will call singleness a gift, which a lot of people nowadays don't see it as that. They see it as a obstacle to overcome.
Yeah, they just have to get through it.
Yeah, something to get through on your way to the pinnacle, which is marriage. Uh-huh. And yet Paul will call it a gift in 1 Corinthians, and he'll say, I'm saying this for your benefit. And he says it's to secure an undistracted devotion to the Lord. And what's fascinating about that is, you go, that's the Apostle Paul saying, this is what singleness is for. Mm-hmm. That we are made, according to Colossians, by God and for God. We're made for Him. Mm-hmm. And then Paul's saying here, every human being goes through a season of singleness. Every single one.
That's right.
We all get it. And there's a distinct purpose by God. It's to keep you from the distractions of marriage so you can lock in on devotion to the Lord. The thing you're made for is going to provide the most meaning in life. That's the North Star. And so Paul doesn't see singleness as that unfortunate first stage on your way, hopefully, to marriage.
Yeah.
He presents it as a gift. And the benefit of singleness is freedom and time. You just have more discretionary time. And what I find in a lot of people today is they fill that time with distractions. And Paul says, no, that's the opposite. The point is to be undistracted.
Are we talking Netflix? Are we talking, like, what kind of distractions?
Oh my gosh, the average young person will spend 10,000 hours gaming before they turn the age 21. It takes less than half to get a bachelor's degree.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and you look at that and you go, man, and I tell young guys that, I'm like, I don't care if you play video games, bro, but don't spend your single season saving fantasy worlds while the real world is on fire. Because there's so much need in the world that you are uniquely positioned as a single person with the great gifts of freedom and time.
Yeah.
And I've even seen it transitioning to DC. It's the singles that have the flexibility to ride out with me to start this new movement.
Yeah.
Whereas married people are like, well, the kids are in school and I got to figure this out. And
how many kids do you have?
I've got three.
So you don't have a lot of time on your hands, you mean?
Yeah. So I talked with a young person about it the other day. She was asking me, have you seen this TV show? I was like, no. Have you seen this one? No. Have you seen this one? No. And then she was so surprised. She was like, how have you not seen any of these shows? Yeah. I'm like, I have three kids under the age of five. I said, I have 30 minutes of discretionary time every day with which to do what I want. And I think that moment helped her. She was like, I have 6 hours. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
I know. But I know many single people want to get married, and I applaud that, and God values that, and I don't want to diminish that. But what makes me sad is every human being does this. They tend to amplify the limits of their stage and downplay its benefits.
Wow, yeah.
And amplify the benefits of the other stage and downplay its deficits. And I think the enemy does that to us to keep us from maximizing our stage. Mm-hmm. Your single stage will end, either in marriage or death. Mm. It will happen, and then it'll be over. And I want every single person to say, I took that freedom God gave me in that time, and I put the throttle down, and I went hard after the things that matter most. And I felt like that's something God helped me do when I was single. And then when I met Donna,
Your wife now.
Yes. I was happy to release the benefits of singleness and take on the limitations that marriage brought me, and there truly were some.
Mm-hmm.
But there were benefits there too, and I like that I've been able to maximize the benefits of each stage, and I just want that for everybody.
Yeah. So you're saying that single people might be some of the most effective people in the kingdom if they can just, for a moment, realize that.
Absolutely.
And then two, actually put their time in the direction of that mission and that purpose.
Yes. I remember when the tsunami hit overseas, as soon as it hit, you're like massive devastation and damage. And I called a friend of mine right away about it. And he said, I'm getting on a plane. And I was like, I knew you were going to say that, because he was single.
Yeah.
And was like, I'm taking my vacation days, and where there's hurt in the world, my singleness is for that.
Yep.
I mean, he saw it as, that's what my singleness is for. And I'm like, I love that, man. Yeah. And especially for me at A&M, when I saw a young person do that, the happiest singles I knew weren't the ones whose eyes were focused on their singleness. Mm-hmm. Their eyes were focused on, how do I leverage my singleness for the glory of God and the good of people? Those were really happy people. Mm-hmm. And what happened is, when they were chasing God with that kind of energy, you know, Paul told Timothy, flee youthful lust, pursue righteousness, love, and peace, along with those who call out to God out of a pure heart.
Yeah.
He's saying, when you commit to that race, you're going to look to your left and right, and people are going to be running just as hard as you, and marry one of those, man. You know?
Yeah.
And the two of you run that race together, that's when life gets fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, C.S. Lewis said the basis of friendship is you looking at someone and saying, oh, you too. It's that the two of you enjoy a common thing. He said, that's why the poor souls who just want friends will never have any.
Yeah.
Because friendship has to be about something. And I've watched in marriages, it's got to be about something.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's about the most important something, that's a happy marriage.
Okay, so speaking of this most important something, let me push back and ask maybe a broader question, which is, why do we even need Jesus to be central to this conversation about our relationships? So whether we're single, dating, engaged, married, why can't we just figure this out, work this out on our own? Is there some particular reason as to why we would want Jesus at the center of our pursuits?
Absolutely. I'll illustrate it, then describe it directly. I would say we have to have a source if we're going to be a source.
Okay.
You know, and so I had a friend years ago that did one of those crazy, unsafe scuba deals where you don't take any classes except for maybe 30 minutes and then you put on the gear and dive into the ocean.
Okay.
So she did one of those little outfitters, and they give you a buddy. And so you each have your own gear, but you're swimming along with a buddy, looking at fish and whatnot.
You can bring a buddy, but if you don't bring a buddy, then it's like, here's your buddy.
Here's your buddy. And she got like a middle-aged guy.
Okay.
And the two of them were enjoying the ocean together. And then something went wrong with his gear. Oxygen quit flowing.
Oh, my.
And there were protocols apparently you were meant to follow at that moment, but as soon as scarcity hit, desperation set in.
Yeah, exactly.
Desperation becomes exploitation. So he grabbed her gear, pulled her respirator out of her mouth,
put it
into his mouth, and then started to try to climb her like a ladder to get out of the ocean, which doesn't make any sense. So he's drowning her.
Oh, wow.
And so she starts to punch him back. Finally, in desperation, he just swims full speed to the surface, which, you know, he didn't adjust for depth at all, made them both very sick.
Oh.
And, you know, now they're no longer friends, buddies of any kind. But you go, what went wrong there? Well, he was fine as long as they had a source of oxygen.
Yeah.
But as soon as he lost his source, he started to exploit her, right? Mm. He came as a sucker of oxygen rather than a supplier of it.
Yeah.
And I find the same thing happens in love. When people come to another human being to make me feel special, make me feel wanted, make me feel needed, we become a sucker of life rather than a source of life.
Mm.
And that's where so many relationships go wrong.
Yeah.
And that's where you saw Jesus with the woman at the well. He came to her and said, go call your husband. She said, I don't have one. He said, I know. You've had five, and now you're living with a guy who won't marry you.
Yeah.
And he's looking at her and going, you have just relational wreckage in your life, but he doesn't give her steps.
Mm-hmm.
He takes her and says, if you knew who you were talking to, you'd ask me, and I would satisfy your thirst with a water that will come welling up out of you. And what he's saying to her is, you have misdiagnosed your need. You have gone from man to man to man looking for deep soul love that you're only going to get from God. So you come to me, I will satisfy your deepest soul needs, and you will be a well of water, not just for yourself, but for others. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by that. To be a source of life to somebody, you have to have a source. And that's what John said in 1 John, beloved, let us love one another. And that's what we want. We want to love people. But you go, why, John? He says, let us love one another because love is from God.
Yeah.
And everyone who loves has been born of God. And so I would tell you, wherever you are relationally, you've got to get a relationship with God right before you'll ever get a relationship with a guy or a girl right. Mm-hmm. Or else, as much as you don't want to, you'll try to use them to fill vacancies, mm-hmm. and they can't do that. Mm-hmm. No human can fill the vacancy a God requires.
Yeah.
And so I would say, you've got to know that you're loved by God. And when you're loved by God, you can love other people. When you know the love of God that comes through Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and that's where John goes. In this, the love of God was manifest. He sent his Son that we would live through him. You get that settled. I am loved by a God like that. Man, now you have a source of love that lets you be a source of love. That love embraced becomes love extended. And so before you even attempt a relationship with a guy or a girl, I would implore you, pursue a relationship with your Maker, because he loves you. He's the satisfier of your soul. You rest in the inexhaustible love of Jesus, and you'll have a source of love for whoever God puts in your path. And so that's where I'd want to leave young people. You start there and then trust him. He's going to lead you safely home. You can trust him with your heart and with your love life. He's worthy of your trust.
I probably should have mentioned this by now, but if you'd like to get your hands on a copy of Ben's book, Single, Dating, Engaged, Married, it's in print, in digital form, in audiobook form, in all the different forms people consume books nowadays, and it's available now wherever books are sold. Passion exists to see a generation leverage their lives for what matters most. Today's episode of the Passion Podcast was produced by myself, with engineering by John Duke, and editing help from Chad Harbaugh and Olivia Becker. If you want to know more about Passion, then come check us out at 268generation.com or follow us on Instagram at Passion268. If you're a fan of this podcast, you can help us get the word out by subscribing on iTunes and leaving us a review. And as always, thanks for listening to the Passion Podcast.